listening to a Sharesies podcast.
Kia ora, this is an audio version of Shared Lunch, Sharesies' weekly live stream conversation between experts, CEOs, and you.
Kia ora, and welcome to Shared Lunch, brought to you by Sharesies in association with Business Desk. Sharesies is a wealth development platform whose purpose is to create financial empowerment for everyone. My name is Dan Brunskill. I'm the markets reporter at Business Desk. We have a special offer for Sharesies investors. If you use the promo code SHAREDLUNCH100, you get $100 off an annual subscription to Business Desk, which is usually $249, including GST. The offer only applies to new Business Desk subscribers and can only be used once per subscriber and can't be used with any other discounts, but we'd love to see you there. Before we jump into the podcast, here's some important information from Sharesies.
Investing involves risk. You might lose the money you start with. We recommend talking to a licensed financial advisor. We also recommend reading product disclosure documents before deciding to invest. Everything you're about to see and hear is current at the time of recording.
Also, quick reminder, if you have any questions for our guests today, you can submit them through the Ask a Question button down below. Don't put your questions in the discussion or chat area, as they're likely to get missed if they're there. But do ask questions. We love to hear from you, love to have those questions, so fire them through. Please be kind and respectful towards our guest and fellow viewers. Otherwise, we will take steps to remove you from the webinar. Today, we're being joined by Lyndall York, who is the Chief Financial Officer of Fisher & Paykel Healthcare, the NZX's biggest company, actually. So welcome, Lyndall.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Your company has been sort of at the heart of markets news in New Zealand for the past 2 years. I'm sure a lot of people have watched with interest. So it's great to have you on and get to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I think we should start with why don't you tell us what it is Fisher & Paykel does? Because I've heard it's not washing machines.
Yeah. Indeed. We started off as one company with appliances many years ago, but about 20 years ago we separated and became separate entities, and healthcare is a very different entity to the appliances entity. We're still sort of friendly cousins, if you will, some colleagues in each business, but absolutely very separate businesses. What Fisher & Paykel Healthcare do is we're the global leader in respiratory humidification devices. We started out a bit over 50 years ago in intensive care, in invasive ventilation, making sure that gas going to patients who couldn't breathe for themselves was humidified. And that was a big growth driver for us. We sort of were changing the practice of how to intubate people and how to deal with them from an invasive ventilation perspective. And that's really at the core of Fisher & Paykel, is that improving patient outcomes. And part of that is about changing clinical practice. So that really was our big growth driver for a while. And then we moved into obstructive sleep apnea in the home care space, and then nasal high flow, which probably everyone has heard about over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So nasal high flow, that's the product that has been used during the pandemic?
Yeah, so all of our products, we do the whole range of respiratory support. So all of them have been used for COVID patients who need respiratory care. And all of them have been around well before COVID. COVID is just one more cause of the symptoms that our products treat and the therapies treat. But nasal high flow definitely became the leading treatment for COVID patients.
Mm-hmm. And talk to us about like what that is compared to a ventilator, because we obviously heard about ventilators a lot. I remember the Fisher & Paykel website in 2020 had a banner on it saying we don't make or supply ventilators. And I suspect you're receiving a lot of requests about that. Can you break down the difference?
Absolutely. So a ventilator is a mechanical flow source that delivers air and oxygen attached to it. Now that's just will flow cold, dry air into a patient. But human beings need warm, humidified air to go into their lungs, because that's what we currently breathe and that's what we do. So particularly for an invasive ventilated patient, that needs to be humidified. So we do the humidifier, that attaches onto a ventilator. Mm-hmm. And so the gas coming out of the ventilator goes through our humidifier, gets humidified and heated, and then it passes through our breathing circuit to the patient. And then nasal high flow, we also do what's called an Airvo machine, which is its own standalone flow generator. You can actually flow oxygen through it, and that delivers nasal high flow.
Yeah, interesting. So your main product in that regard in a ventilator is the part that makes it moist and warm and breathable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So with a humidifier that attaches to a ventilator, or an Airvo that is a flow generator and humidifier in one.
Yeah. Okay. So key products, but not necessarily standalone products. So obviously the demand for that went up enormously during the pandemic because everyone was experiencing really bad respiratory symptoms. When did you, in 2020, when the news was sort of slowly breaking of a new virus appearing, how soon did you hear about it and how soon were you knowing that it was going to be a big deal for the company?
Yeah, we saw pretty much early on, because we do have salespeople in Wuhan, so we were seeing what they were dealing with or hearing what they were dealing with. And our salespeople are very clinically focused. They're in hospitals. They're helping clinicians and physicians install the equipment, train them on how to use the various therapies, and work through with the staff of a hospital that way. So our salespeople in Wuhan were working around the clock. So we saw that probably early January. By mid to late January, we were sort of thinking through ourselves going, actually, there's no reason why we can't see this becoming a global pandemic. We need to be ready for this to go around the world and the demand for our products to really ramp up. So we started ramping up by the end of January in terms of production, mm-hmm. sourcing in raw materials, getting as ready as we could be.
Yeah. And then how long after that did demand start to pick up?
It started picking up pretty much then, because we were seeing it in Wuhan, and then sort of as COVID moved around the world, demand really ramped up for that.
Because of course, if you can predict it, others could as well, and hospitals were knowing they would need more capacity.
Correct.
What was it like just working in a business that was responding to the pandemic? Obviously, it was like a very intense time for everyone, whether you were stuck at home, you know, isolating or working in the hospital. Or did you have a sense of mission? What were meetings like at the time? What was the vibe like, if I can ask?
Yeah, this sort of goes to the DNA of Fisher & Paykel Healthcare, to be honest. We're all about improving patient outcomes, and it's all about the patient and how we can improve their life and the treatment of them. So really our guiding light has always been treatment of patients, and that was just really elevated through COVID, and just the urgency of we want to make sure that every single patient that needs to be treated can be treated. And we had teams just working around the clock, and it was all hands on deck, moving into different areas wherever people were needed. We'd go in there, so that where there were parts of the business that weren't as busy, they would volunteer into other parts of the business. And again, that's really part of the F&P way.
Yeah. Interesting. So I guess we are now, we don't want to say post-pandemic because it's still with us, but we are in a situation where large parts of the world are vaccinated, sort of the hospitalization rate is much, much, much lower. And that demand for Fisher & Paykel products is subsiding. You did sell a whole lot more products. It's been like a big change for the company. You ramped up all that extra capacity. How is that reformed the business? Is the business going to be permanently bigger now, or will it just settle back down to how it was? What does that mean, Fisher & Paykel, now that the pandemic is over?
Yeah. there's really been no major shift in how we've approach our business. Before the pandemic, what did set us up well was our strategy, which was we've always wanted to be able to deal with surge demand. You know, if you get a bad flu season, there's often likely a big surge in demand. different countries wanting to sort of change some of their clinical practice through the hospital, then you get a big order and a big shift there. So we've always wanted to make sure that we're not running our machines 24/7, our equipment 24/7, so that we've got the ability to ramp up quickly. So that was always our philosophy. In the first probably year or so of COVID, we were running everything flat chat. And so we've now managed to ease that back to how we would normally want to be running, which is a great thing. But we have been in this business for over 50 years. So COVID is not what we're all about. We've been treating patients well and truly and having strong growth pre-COVID, and we see that continuing going forward. This has just sort of given us a bit of an acceleration of the penetration of nasal high flow globally, and that's a fantastic position to be in because there's so many patients that can benefit from this therapy, and we're nowhere near fully penetrated with all of that.
Mm-hmm. You when you report your earnings, you sort of break down two different product sections in your hospital product. You have your hardware and your consumables. Mm. Can you break us down for us what hardware and consumables mean?
Yeah, certainly. Hardware is the machine, the humidifier that attaches to the ventilator, and that's a capital purchase for a hospital. They purchase the humidifier that attaches to the ventilator and lasts for years and years and years and years. Or it's our Airvo machine, which delivers the nasal high flows, that inbuilt flow generator and humidifier. So that's the hardware. And then the consumables is the per patient set of the breathing circuit, the water chamber that humidifies the gas, and the cannula or interface or mask that goes with the patient. So the hardware is a sort of one-time purchase, and then the consumable set is the per patient recurring revenue stream.
Interesting. So I remember at your investor day, your managing director sort of said over the last two financial years during COVID, they supplied $880 million of hospital hardware. He said it was the equivalent of approximately 10 years of hardware sale prior to COVID. So it seems like you've sold a lot more of that hardware. Is the expectation now that hardware sales might be lower because everyone already has your stuff, but the consumable sales might be higher because more people are using it? How does that kind of mix change?
Yeah, so before COVID, around about 15% of our hospital revenue was hardware, with about 85% consumables. And hardware has always been a bit of a lumpy part of our business because it's, as we go through its change of clinical practice, getting a hospital to say, yes, I'm now going to be treating these types of patients with nasal high flow, I now need the equipment to do that. And so that is a bit lumpy anyway. And so the shift going forward, we really don't quite know in this short term how that's all going to play out, what that's going to look like. Definitely in the absence of ongoing COVID surges, we can't see the hardware side of the business being as elevated as it has been over the last couple of years. But on the other hand, we're nowhere near at the point where we would say everyone who could use this therapy has all of the equipment that they need. Until there's a piece of machinery on every single bed in the ICU, every bed in the emergency room, every bed in the respiratory ward and general wards, then we would say there's still opportunity there for the hardware, for further hardware sales. But that's not going to be the key focus. It's going to be making sure that all of this 10 years worth of hardware that we've sold out there in the 2 years starts, you know, gets used for respiratory care.
Yeah, because that's interesting. Because if a hospital has sort of rushed out to buy your product to treat COVID, and now they're no longer seeing enormous COVID surges, they're probably still seeing some COVID patients, but no longer huge surges. Well, what sort of other things can this be used for? And are you going out and teaching them, why don't you use it on this? And how does that kind of go? How do you make sure that hardware is not just sitting there in a closet gathering dust?
Yeah, this is all part of changing clinical practice, which is what we have been doing for over 50 years and really continues. And it starts with that clinical evidence and understanding the patients, and it's more the symptoms. So when somebody presents to the hospital with certain symptoms, shortness of breath, low oxygen saturations, issues around that, respiratory distress, then nasal high flow can help treat those symptoms. So it's really talking through all of that with the hospital. And there's a lot of clinical evidence and a lot of clinical data and even clinical practice guidelines that provide recommendations of where to use nasal high flow. So it's going through and talking through all of that with the physicians. Now, some of them were already using it before COVID, so they're like, fantastic, I've now got all this equipment, I'm just going to keep using it. So there'll be all ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned earlier, but before we went live, that you have some construction next door, and you're also building a new manufacturing facility, I believe, in Mexico, to add to already a pretty big network of capacity. That new capacity you're adding, is that consumable manufacturing? Is there any particular focus? You're obviously expecting more demand for your products. You're building more manufacturing.
Yeah. We always want to have the ability to ramp up production if we get a bit of surge demand. Hardware manufacturing is actually quite a small footprint of what we do. And, in terms of that revenue in a normalized pre-COVID world was about 15% of our revenue was hardware. So the sort of floor space of manufacturing aligns a bit to that or even less. Due to sort of the volume and price points of it. So a lot of the manufacturing, it's to cover all of our growth, which will include hardware, but really consumables is the big driver of growth. And we always want to be sitting on either an empty building or a near empty building so that we can continue to grow and have that strong growth that we've always had, as well as new product introductions as we continue to do.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. But maybe this is standard for a healthcare business, but it feels to me like most businesses try and run as lean as possible. They don't add any more capacity until they definitely have a customer to buy it, and they're constantly living on the edge. That seems to be less common now after the pandemic. But is it usual for a healthcare business to sort of have that extra capacity, or is that sort of a Fisher and Paykel thing?
It's certainly a very Fisher and Paykel thing, because the way we see it and what it is if a patient needs our therapy, if we're running lean and don't have that product, they can't be treated the best way that they could. So we feel an obligation to make sure that if anybody needs the treatment, we've got product out there for them, and we want to be able to deliver that in whatever circumstances.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about, because there is one more aspect to your business. We've been talking about the hospital products, the consumables, the hardware, but you also do sleep apnea. Can you tell us what sleep apnea is and what your product is? Because I'm not sure. My dad actually has sleep apnea.
Right.
He used to always fall asleep on the couch, and we would mock him for years and years and years. Mm. I feel really bad about this, about how dad would always fall asleep. Then one day he went to see a doctor, and it turned out he had sleep apnea, and he was falling asleep all the time because he was not getting a good night's sleep. And now he gets plugged into this insane elephant machine at night that helps him breathe, and he doesn't fall asleep on the couch anymore. Can you tell us about sleep apnea and how you treat it?
Yes, sleep apnea is where you stop breathing during your sleep. And often it's the person's partner who will hear them sort of stop breathing and then wake up with a, and a big snore like that. But it's actually quite a dangerous condition because, as you've seen, you fall asleep on the couch. People can fall asleep driving as well. My neighbour, I just sort of met a new neighbour the other day, and he said he started getting diagnosed with OSA because he had a micro sleep driving home one night. And thankfully his wife yelled out to him, so he swerved back to the right side of the road, all fine. But it's like, gosh, okay, you can't having a mini sleep on the couch is one thing, but doing that when you're driving or operating any equipment is really not a safe thing to do. So that's what sleep apnea is. It's the stopping breathing while you're sleeping. And the treatment for that is to provide a constant flow of air to the patient to sort of keep the airways open and keep them breathing. So it keeps the airways open is what it does. It's that constant pressure there.
Mm-hmm. And that part of your business did not do so well during the pandemic. You obviously had this huge boom in hospital products, but people weren't being diagnosed with sleep apnea. People weren't seeking out that treatment. And those sales slowed right down. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that the market growth really slowed because in OSA, it does sort of rely on growing patient diagnoses and patient new patient starts, which is diagnoses and then actually starting the treatment, having all of the equipment to start the treatment. And definitely through COVID and particularly the big surges of COVID, a lot of the sleep labs were closing down, there were lockdowns, so people weren't going out, either people were afraid to go out and try and get medical treatment for issues. So there's no easy, clear or definitive data on it, but sort of what we were seeing and anecdotally what we were seeing around the business was definitely a suppressed level of new patient starts, which then does impact our sale of masks because you're not getting new patients starting the therapy.
And are you starting to see that side of the business come back as hospital sales come down? Is sleep apnea diagnoses going back up?
Yeah, we definitely are seeing the diagnoses go back up, and I think we probably anecdotally feel as though that the diagnoses are almost back to normal. But I guess the other challenge is there's now a bit of a constraint on the hardware to treat it. So, you know, the machine that delivers the gas, so not the mask, but the machine that delivers it, there's a bit of constraint in the industry around supply of that. So whilst diagnoses might be back to normal, they still need the machine to be able to start the therapy.
Yeah.
So there's still a bit of a suppression there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess another thing that is interesting is we're sort of in a position now where Fisher & Paykel's revenues and profits they look like they're falling. They're obviously falling from an incredibly high level, but if you just log into an app and look today, you'll see that revenue coming down, but you're obviously very confident about growth in the future and that it will presumably normalize and then head back up again. And again, in your Investor Day, you sort of talked about having a goal of doubling revenue every 5 to 6 years. And that was sort of a 2019 goal that you're just bringing forward and renewing, but obviously from a slightly higher base. Can you talk a little bit about, I don't want you to give any sort of forecast or, you know, earnings guidance that you can't give, but can you talk about how you expect revenue to track from here? It's coming down. How much further is going to come back? It's going to come down. You expect it to go up again. Can you give us, paint us a bit of a picture around that?
Yeah, look, we certainly can't forecast exactly what revenue is going to be doing. And there's, you know, the two main components. One is hardware. And again, in the absence of big COVID surges, we can't see it staying at the levels that it was in FY22. But never before have we been in the unique position where when we're trying to change clinical practice, we're talking to customers who already have so much equipment. Normally where that's part of that change of clinical practice process is getting them to purchase the equipment. Now they've got a lot of that equipment out there. So that really helps relieve one of those hurdles to changing clinical practice. So we're actually really excited about that opportunity. We can't predict the pace of the change of that clinical practice, but when we model different scenarios to say, look, if it took us 3, 4, or 5 years for, say, 85% of the hardware we've sold in the last 2 years to be used at comparable levels to what we were using on average before COVID, that gives us really good growth in our hospital consumables. And then to the extent we sell more hardware, that's even more growth on top of it. We've released some great new products in our anesthesia, respiratory support, our anesthesia Optiflow business, and that's going to help continue to drive that growth. So we sort of look here today and say, has anything changed from those aspirations of doubling every 5 to 6 years? And absolutely not. We've just accelerated the penetration of nasal high flow. Don't know by how much, but that'll sort of work its way out. But great opportunity to continue that penetration and then bring forward the other areas of our business that we were wanting to be material in the sort of medium and longer term and get them to be a bit more material earlier.
Yeah. It seemed like the really key message that came out of that Investor Day was we're confident that growth will come in the future. Exactly how fast, exactly how much, exactly when is really hard to predict, but we're confident it will come.
Absolutely. And you know, we've just got such a great opportunity at the moment, and you know, releasing new products. So nothing changed in our business in terms of still working on those longer term aspirations and product development. So that's why we're still able to deliver fantastic new products now.
Yeah. Just a reminder to the listeners, do fire through your questions if you want to know anything about respirators, Fisher & Paykel. I have a slightly niche question that I'm always just curious about. It is, what exactly does a chief financial officer do?
A chief financial officer, really the key focus for me and for my team is to make sure that the business is in a strong position, a strong stable position, so that the rest of the business pretty much don't need to worry about the finances of the business, because we sort of make sure that it's all under control, managing that, providing the information to the business that they need to be able to make the right decisions. And we work sort of together, very collaborative around, okay, here's the strategy, here's how we fund it. We make sure that we've got a very conservative balance sheet so that the business can withstand anything that might happen. All of this uncertainty around COVID, you know what, we need to just keep building buildings, we need to keep increasing manufacturing capacity, and my job as a CFO is to make sure that the business can continue doing that without even thinking about it.
So there's a question here from Jean, who says, I have used Fisher & Paykel healthcare products such as OptiFlow well before COVID for any respiratory illness plus heart failure. Do you expect offshore hospitals to widen their usage now that they are more familiar with the concept of high flow and sales will remain high?
That's certainly part of the change of clinical practice, is having hospitals and physicians familiar with the therapy and being able to see the benefit of the therapy. And that's what we have been doing for years and years. That is how we change clinical practice. There definitely will be some hospitals and some physicians who were using it pre-COVID or wanted to but just didn't have the equipment. Now they've got a lot more equipment, so they'll really absolutely continue using it for anyone who needs respiratory support, and regardless of what you present with, it's really the symptoms we're treating. So that definitely is a possibility. But there's also probably physicians and hospitals out there that weren't as familiar with nasal high flow pre-COVID, who may see it just as a COVID therapy, and we need to go in there and spend some time with them to talk them through all the clinical evidence and the different types of patients that could benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. You talked about having a sales team in Wuhan. Do you have sales teams in markets all around the world?
We do, and that's has been one of our key areas of investment through the last couple of years. Is our strategy has always been, when revenue gets to a certain size or there's enough equipment in a certain location, we want to have some of our own people on the ground. And so we have our own people in over 50 countries now around the globe.
What's your total headcount? How many are in your team?
We've got over 7,000 employees globally.
Yeah. And it is interesting because you are a business based in Auckland, New Zealand, but incredibly global. Lots of your manufacturing is in Mexico. 50 countries you have sales team in. How many countries do you export to? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Yeah, look, we sell into over 120, probably 130 odd countries.
That's incredible, considering there is roughly 200 countries. Here's a good question from Dave. How has the global semiconductor shortage impacted the ability to supply products and perhaps even the margins you're earning on devices? Has that affected you at all?
Yeah, we haven't really experienced any customer disruption in the hospital space coming out of that. And again, part of that was us seeing very early on in the pandemic the potential surge and then the supply chain disruptions happening or starting to happen quite early. So we were making sure that we were getting lots of raw materials in, building healthy levels of inventory. So we're sort of comfortable that it hasn't had a material impact on our business, and we haven't had any customer disruptions from that on that side. Where it probably has had a little bit of an impact is in our CPAP machines in the OSA business, slightly different chip, and we weren't seeing the big surges, so weren't getting the higher levels of raw materials in there. But we're a small part of our business.
Mm. Yeah, it was very interesting to me while we were writing about many other companies having enormous supply chain problems, didn't seem to affect Fisher & Paykel so much. Why was it that you were able to keep, is there priority because you're a healthcare business or sort of why were you less affected by those supply chain challenges than perhaps others?
Definitely in the early days of the pandemic, we were getting some preferential treatment for supply, mm-hmm. Given the products that we were making. That's pretty much normalized now. I think it's probably a couple of things. One is we always want to hold sufficient, like quite healthy levels of inventory to be able to manage ramping up production as well as around our offices so the product can get out quickly to customers. So having that as our business model helped, and then continuing that purchase and really accelerating that purchase to be able to deal with, gosh, if we have a massive surge, we want to be able to do it. So we were really even increasing the level of inventory we were wanting to hold. So that certainly helped. But just an enormous dedication of our team, particularly our procurement team, which increased from maybe about 3 people to about 20 people who this is what they focus on all day, every day, and have done a phenomenal job.
Mm. I heard a famous investor recently, I forget who it was, but he was saying back when he started his career, the CEOs were all marketing people. They came up through the marketing chain. He said all the CEOs now are supply chain people. Yeah. And it's just like all these businesses, supply chain is the most important thing in the world right now. And if you're a supply chain person, you're in hot demand.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Back to the questions. Colin asks, your business sounds quite unique in New Zealand. Who are your main competitors in New Zealand or indeed are your main competitors overseas businesses?
Yeah, we don't really have many New Zealand-based competitors. So most of our competitors are overseas. But for context, we probably got about 60 to 70% of the global market share in the hospital therapies that we operate in. So yeah, we do have competitors, but they're more outside of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. Can you name check some, or is that a no-no?
Oh, look, there's you know, well, in the sleep space, OSA, ResMed, Philips, mm-hmm. Sort of the key ones there. And in the hospital space, there's sort of a US company and then some Chinese competitors there.
Mm-hmm. I tend to notice sort of writing about markets that sometimes when ResMed moves, Fisher & Paykel share price will move as well. Investors at least see a correlation between those two companies.
Yeah. So in the OSA sort of mask business is probably the main area there.
Yeah. I'm going to throw this question to you, but feel free to answer it as indirectly as you like. Someone asks, when will we see a positive return to our investment in your company, i.e. increase in either share price or dividends? I suspect this is someone that has invested relatively recently and has felt the share price fall and maybe isn't feeling super good about it. When you speak to investors who are feeling nervous, what do you say to them?
The key for us is we just focus on the business and looking at the long-term opportunity and try to explain to the market and to you the opportunity there and that long-term growth prospects and aspirations, as well as our history of being able to achieve that. So in terms of what happens to the share price, that's really up to the markets. We can't control that. What we do try to do is really try to be clear with our message around the great opportunity that we've got and that the total addressable market, which we've barely penetrated in. And then dividends, we have actually got quite a good history of increasing our dividends, and we still increased our dividend last year, even though net profit after tax went backwards.
Yeah, Yeah. I was speaking to a fund manager just the other day about a different company that had some share price decline. And I was asking him about that. And he sort of said, as a fund manager, I hate companies that talk about their share price. If a CEO starts talking about their share price, I'm immediately turned off. He said, I just want them to do the business really good. And then we in the market will set the share price. And if you don't like the share price, you should go talk to other investors about why they're doing it, because the company should just be focusing on doing the company real good.
We're not the ones out there buying and selling.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I also find it very helpful to just sort of zoom out the chart sometimes, and you can see that the share price is, maybe it's come down a little bit, but not from where it was. So talk to me about your manufacturing setups in Mexico. How long have you been manufacturing in Mexico, and why is Mexico the place that you do manufacturing?
Yeah, so we've been manufacturing in Mexico for a bit over 10 years now. We still do have the majority of our manufacturing in New Zealand, about two thirds in New Zealand, about a third in Mexico. And whenever we sort of look to go offshore for manufacturing, and we are looking at a third manufacturing location, so outside New Zealand and Mexico as well, one of the critical aspects is the ability to get skilled people who either live there or are willing to move there to work, and ideally with some strong medical device expertise and skill to manufacture our products. And Tijuana in Mexico is a really strong hub of medical device expertise there, and close to the US, which is one of our biggest markets.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So there's expertise there, and obviously it's great for supplying into the US. Because it's interesting, because I kind of, for a long time, China has been sort of the manufacturing hub, and as Chinese wages have become higher, it's sort of starting to move into Southeast Asia. You don't hear so much about New Zealand businesses manufacturing in South America. So that's quite interesting. Why do you, if you know, why is it that there is quite a lot of medical manufacturing expertise in Tijuana? Is there just like a little micro system there, or?
I think it's a lot of pharma, med tech, are big US corporations, and so it's sort of a natural hub that's developed there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Let's see, are there any more questions? Oh, we have worked through all the questions already. What is something you are most excited about at Fisher & Paykel sort of in the next year or the next two? It's probably been a fairly exhausting couple of years. How are your energy levels? Are you excited about what's to come?
Yeah, look, we are. It has been a very busy few years for everybody in the organization. But we've released some fantastic new products recently, a couple in our anesthesia space. So there's some wonderful opportunity there. We're increasing our investment in that sales team to, ramp up the growth in that area. As I said before, just the fact that we've got 10 years worth of hardware that we've sold in 2 years, and that's already out there in customers' hands, and so many more physicians have now had experience with nasal high flow, is just such a unique opportunity that we've never ever had in our history of changing of clinical practice. It is certainly all very exciting. As we look through the longer term future of the company, there's plenty of products in the pipeline still to come. We've got a great new Evora full OSA mask that we've just released in the US, been out in Australia and Europe for a while, performing really, really well. So there's a lot that we're very excited about.
Yeah. Because that's an interesting part of the business that we haven't talked about. Obviously, you manufacture and sell these products, but you also have to invent them. Can you talk to me about the innovation that Fisher & Paykel does, and how much goes into R&D, and how do you build these products?
Yeah, we've got a really, really strong R&D team, and we invest, we aim to grow our R&D investment in line with revenue sort of over the long term. Sometimes we'll be a bit above, sometimes we'll be a bit below. So sort of on average around about 9% of our revenue we invest in R&D. And there's the way we structure our business is around the product groups or the therapies. So everyone embeds really really closely and well around that, and R&D working with manufacturing. That's why we have so much manufacturing in New Zealand, because our first products we want to make where the R&D team are, so that part of that development and innovation is not just the product, but how do we make it? And make it well.
Yeah, so I'm sort of vaguely aware that there's a lot of advanced technology used in these products, things like photonics and the use of lasers. And how much do you think of Fisher & Paykel as being sort of a tech business in that regard?
Look, we certainly see ourselves as a strong innovator, and whatever helps with that innovation, we're there and we're across and work on. And, you know, great pipeline of grads coming into the business with all of that knowledge and expertise and developing and yeah, so our people are out and about understanding all of that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the two-thirds of manufacturing is here in New Zealand, and you like to manufacture here first, but we have an incredibly tight labor market. How has it been finding enough hands to actually do that manufacturing, particularly when you had to do enormous outputs during the pandemic?
Yeah, we haven't generally found it too much of an issue. You know, we're a big company within New Zealand. We're, I think, an attractive employer. We've got a fantastic campus here that's lovely for people to come and work for. I think that we've got a wonderful culture that people enjoy and come working for. So we haven't actually had any real challenges from that regards. And I guess if you think about early on in the pandemic, there were a number of companies who weren't in the same position as us and were ratcheting down while we were ratcheting up. So I think that helped.
Okay. Balanced out a little bit. I heard at the Investor Day that some of those people that were hired for surge demand during the pandemic, they were hired on sort of on 1 year or fixed term contracts, which will roll off and help you manage costs as demand comes down. Is that correct?
Yeah, we always have a level of sort of temporary staff to manage, you know, different increases in production level, but we are a growing business, and so actually a lot of people do end up converting into more permanent employees as we continue to grow and continue to grow our total employees as we grow our own business.
Yeah. Okay, cool. But I think there's just one last quick question from Bill Potter. Says, will the Mexico factories produce consumables or hardware or both?
We only produce consumables out of our Mexico factories, so we do all of the hardware here in New Zealand.
Yeah, awesome. Lyndall York, thank you so much for joining us and giving us such a deep dive into the business. We incredibly appreciate it.
No worries, Dan. It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
We'll talk again. And thanks so much for everyone for tuning in. Big thanks to Lyndall again. We really appreciate your time and insights. Keep an eye on the Sharesies social media channels for news of next week's topic and guest, and watch your inbox because we'll send you an email as well. But until then, enjoy the rest of your week and stay safe.
For more info, visit sharesies.co.nz or look us up on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.